You're listening to Closer Look here on 90.1 WABE. I'm Rose Scott.
And I'm Dennis O'Hare. Well, you've probably heard the scientific and political debates about climate change, but now the conversation's moved to national security, too. A retired Navy Rear Admiral is suggesting climate change is the greatest threat to security at home. Admiral David Titley is also the founding director of the Center for Solutions to Weather and Climate Risk at Penn State, and he joins us from the campus studio there. We're joined here by Professor Jared Hayes, who's at the Sam Nunn School of International Affairs at Georgia Tech. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
To have you here.
Thanks very much, Dennis.
Admiral, I'll start with you. Just now, of course, South Carolina is dealing with these devastating floods after days of rain, and already we're hearing the arguments. Slate, on its website, for instance, has an article from meteorologist Eric Holthaus, who said, sadly, this is exactly the type of event we can expect to see more of as the planet warms. But is it really safe or premature even to chalk up this or any single event to climate change? Is that too easy a link to make?
Well, again, thanks very much, Dennis and Rose, for having me on this afternoon. It's interesting that you bring this up because the United States National Academies of Science has exactly that same question. How much can you attribute any single individual extreme weather event to climate change as a whole? So the National Academies has actually put together a committee of scientists to study this so that we figure out what it is that can be scientifically supported when attributing or linking specific events like these horrific South Carolina floods to climate and what cannot. And in full disclosure, I've actually been asked to chair that committee. Our report should be out early in 2016, and I hope we can shed some light on just that question you asked.
Well, Professor Hayes, the argument from Eric Holthaus was, okay, look, you know, you have warmer temperatures in the atmosphere that speeds evaporation, which then produces a kind of chain reaction, which can produce the kinds of things we saw in South Carolina. But is it that simple?
The challenge with climate change is that it's very difficult to identify a specific event that you can sort of unambiguously trace to the dynamic of changing atmospheric chemistry and oceanic chemistry. And so this is part of the problem of communicating climate change to the American public, because it changes percentages, odds that something is going to happen. So maybe the rain is more intense in South Carolina than it might have been otherwise. Maybe the confluence of Hurricane Joaquin pumping up rainfall is more likely this year than it would have been in past years. But it's not unambiguously the case that Hurricane Joaquin would not have existed if climate change was not occurring. That's the challenge.
Gentlemen, I'm curious because there was a report that was released this summer to Congress, and it talked about the impact climate change will have on national security. But when you talk about the people that make policy, our American policymakers, and this whole debate, how challenging is it? Because people have varied views on this, and then you talk about policy, so the challenge here is trying to get everyone on board, but then you're met with some that say, well, wait, now there is nothing definite on climate change. So how do you begin to talk about policy here?
So there's the way climate is I think probably all your listeners know this. It's really the averages. It's the average either in the past or it's the averages going forward in the future. And within those averages, there are these extreme events. And as we were just talking about, it'll be very interesting to see how the science ultimately looks at the extreme event we've just experienced this weekend. In the national security establishment, senior policymakers are used to looking at things in a risk-based context. I mean, you never know exactly what's going to happen. And I would argue that for the long term over the hemisphere and continents, we actually know a lot about what's going to happen on climate, certainly when compared to, let's say, how the intelligence community, what they can tell you about the world in 30, 40, or 50 years. So, but we don't know everything, and we're probably never going to know every single thing. So what you do is you take a look at this in a risk context, and you try to basically buy down or manage or hedge or whatever word you want to use the worst of those risks, and then you figure out how it is that you're going to deal with the likely cases. But you want to keep your eye on those really bad things because, as I'm fond of quoting, the worst matters much more than the bad.
Professor Hayes?
What's interesting here is that you have a confluence between how science and scientists talk about climate change. They talk about it in percentages. So as I just said, the percentage change in rainfall that we might expect in one climate change scenario versus another, and the risk assessment that happens in the national security complex, there's an alignment there in terms of how they're thinking about these kinds of situations and issues. The challenge is that there's a disjuncture between those logics and how the public thinks about security. So the public doesn't think about security in the way that the Admiral just highlighted. That it doesn't think in terms of risk percentages. It thinks in terms of existential threats. And that means that the logic of security that the Admiral, I think, rightly points to is very challenging to sell from a public standpoint because the public doesn't see the existential threat that's communicated through the language of security.
And Admiral, when people hear climate change and security risk, they're probably going to think first the U.S. military. And is that sort of the way to sort of back into this whole conversation? Because there's also social and economic events that play into this as well.
Well, absolutely. There are many, many events. And I think one of the things we're seeing really in the last year or two in this country, I spend far too much time inside the Beltway in Washington, but it's nice to get outside and sort of look at how the rest of the country's doing. And we see from big business, we see insurance, we see finance, we see security, health, as well as the traditional environmental and scientific constituencies. And the moral part, as we just saw a couple weeks ago with the Pope's visit, we see these different constituencies sort of arguing or advocating, if you will, for there is a risk here with climate if we don't do anything. And within their own sort of communities, we're coming together. And that's actually encouraging. So, you know, Professor Hayes is certainly right. I wouldn't expect, you know, my mom to know the intricacies of risk-based management in a national security sense. But she doesn't know that for our policy on Asia or Africa otherwise. She expects that the U.S. government is going to behave like an adult and make sure that we keep our country safe. And at the end of the day, that's really what this is about. The military is here to protect our American way of life, to keep us safe, to do that in the Pentagon and in the National Security Council and other senior policy organs. You take this wide look of lots of different threats. And when I talk about climate, I talk about this as a principle, one of the principal threats. I would not say it is the threat, but it is a principal threat because we've built human civilization on this assumption of climate stability. So as we move away from climate stability, what can change? The military is kind of the last resort because we get called in, or the military gets called in, when things go bad. So it behooves us to work pretty hard to make sure that things don't go so bad that you don't end up calling in the military. That's actually a success story for the DOD if you're not being used.
But Admiral, at the heart of the question of what can we do to make sure that things don't get out of hand is the question of whether human activity contributes to climate change. Because if the climate is changing just because of natural forces, you gear your responses that way. But if human activity is responsible, then you have another set of challenges as well. Do you think human activity is part of climate change?
Well, yes, it is. I mean, this is what I call cutting edge 19th century science. We've known since Fourier, Arnhuss, and Tyndall, basically mid to late 19th century, early 20th century sciences, what greenhouse gases do. And it's really, frankly, not a political issue. I said, you know, the ice doesn't care about politics or liberal or conservative. The ice just melts as it gets warmer there. So we understand that the greenhouse gases are significantly increasing. And when you take a look at the types of gases, we understand where they come from. They come from burning fossil fuels. So, yes, that's there. But the two things from a security perspective you need to do is you need to be ready. And a lot of that is adaptation in the next few decades. And frankly, you can take the reason that the climate is changing, and you can put that aside, and you can have a pretty substantive conversation with both lawmakers as well as senior military officials on what do we need to do for the next, let's say, 10, 20, 30, 40 years. When you start looking beyond that, when you start seeing the cost of getting ready and the fact that those costs will continue to increase, because if we don't do anything, the climate will continue to change and the extremes will become commonplace and the new extremes will be things we have literally never experienced, then people start saying, you know, we can't really deal with this. And then that opens up the, well, let's talk about the root causes. And that gets into frankly, figuring out how do we move the world's energy systems to non-carbon-based fuels, but to do so in a way that maintains or even enhances not only ours, but frankly, the other, you know, 7 billion people's way of life.
We're talking with retired Rear Admiral David Titley and Georgia Tech Professor Jared Hayes about climate change and national security. Professor Hayes, let's talk about then, we've sort of been hinting at what the security threats might be, but are there some examples you can think of that people are looking at in terms of saying, okay, here are some things that could happen, some possible scenarios if the climate continues to change, things that could pose a threat to our national security?
Well, there are a lot of scenarios, and they tend to be fairly regional in their orientation. So, for example, people in Miami are concerned about rising sea level and their access to fresh water. People in California, where I did my PhD, are very worried about wildfires. The challenge, though, I think, is that this language of security is not a good basis for policymaking. It tends to reinforce traditional structures of national security. So we would turn to, if climate change is a security threat, then we turn to the military as a primary basis for ensuring our safety against that threat. We tend to marginalize other societies, conceiving of them as potentially threats, right? So a lot of the language of threat is about migration or instability in other places. And so we have a tendency to try to prevent those other places from affecting us.
Well, gentlemen, we've identified the problem. You just mentioned some examples here. But when you talk about risk management measures here, where do you begin? And does it begin within the Department of Defense? And who sort of takes the lead on this?
Well, that's the problem. In order to address climate change, we have to fundamentally rewrite our energy infrastructure that drives our economy. And that's not something the Department of Defense can do. It's a huge user of energy, mm-hmm. but it is not, it's a drop in the bucket compared to the national energy use and the global energy use. And that's just not something security is well positioned to force us to do. We need public buy-in at a broad level in order to change our energy infrastructure.
Admiral?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things in which I would agree that fundamentally this is not the DOD that's going to solve the energy issue. But the U.S. Navy under Secretary Mabus has invested quite aggressively in some non-renewables and some things like biofuels, which basically recycle carbon rather than digging up new carbon and putting it in the atmosphere. With the same idea that if the DOD can pioneer these technologies, which are certainly not mature right now and are expensive, and if they can bring them to scale, and everybody knows the story of, you know, DOD having done this with many things from transistors to global positioning system, you know, et cetera, internet, that's one way, kind of through the back door, if you will, that the DOD can look at this. I would just say in response to Professor Hayes about securitizing climate, I think one of the reasons the DOD, certainly that we talked about it, and we talked about it at very senior levels in the Navy, is to bring this up, one, to make sure we're ready for the changes that are going to happen. Even if I could snap my fingers today, we go to zero carbon. Just because of the physics, because of the lag in the system, we're going to keep changing the climate for at least another 3 or 4 decades minimum. But the longer term part is we don't want this to be a Department of Defense issue. We don't want the DOD to be the solver, because the DOD, as the professor mentioned, is not the solver. But we do want congressmen and the public to understand that if it is not solved, one of the realizations of this is that we have a big security issue. We'll have a big agriculture issue. We'll have a health issue. We'll have basically human safety issues when you start talking about some of the things, you know, even that we've seen this past weekend. But one of the issues becomes security, and the DOD isn't looking for that. They're not investing in that. They don't want it, but they are concerned that if we as a nation do not get serious about this, that's going to be something else that gets dropped on their plate.
And from a global standpoint, how important could the United Nations play a role in all of this? Because I believe that they're asking countries to sort of submit their plan here for climate change and looking forward into the future.
Yeah, the COP21 meeting is in Paris in December. And that's another way in which the language of security can be challenging, because we need to generate cooperation at the global level. And security can generate cooperation, but can also generate competition, and competition will not further our agenda in this regard.
Yeah, Professor, you pointed out in a paper you did that politically in the U.S., the response to climate change for policymakers is fairly tough, because a lot of members of Congress are facing folks who deny climate change at all. On the other hand, in Europe, there's a very strong environmental lobby, and our allies, on whom we rely, have a different political challenge in responding to this. So how do we all get on the same page here?
That's really challenging, and it's ultimately up to American policymakers to show the American public, as well as public opinion leaders, the significance of climate change. There will always be people who deny it. There are people who think the Earth is flat, too. But if you can show them a direction that generates a belief in benefits from addressing climate change, that demonstrates the cost to future generations to generating moral response to climate change, you might be able to get traction here.
Admiral, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it certainly is kind of the $64 question, and not to make this a big political show, but I'm sure, as Professor Hayes, you know, recognizes, you know, many of the Republicans, their threat to getting, you know, keeping their job is not in the general election. It's from, you know, very, very conservative people who have maybe quite different beliefs, but they're the ones who vote in the primaries. So how do we frame this issue so that, you know, quite a few Republicans, at least the ones that I talk to on the Hill, I mean, they understand the science. Maybe not everybody, but most of them do. But they also understand the politics, and they understand if they just come out and say, hey, you know, this climate thing, it's a big deal, we need to take care of it, they may not have an election, or they may not have a job after the next primary cycle. So what's the framing? Do we not maybe talk quite so much about climate change? And I'm a meteorologist and kind of a climate guy. But do we frame this as more as renewable energy? And one of the things renewable energy gets you is much more sustained cost, assured cost. How does increasingly big business is asking for certainty in this area? We're seeing this in finance. The governor of the Bank of England gave quite a compelling speech on this just 3 days ago in London, at Lloyd's of London, how the insurance companies get involved in this, because, you know, at the end of the day, it kind of gets down to money. And if the guys with the money are going to basically help with this, that will all be kind of a tailwind. So it's really a framing issue. It's sort of how can we take two steps back from the very, very partisan environment, and maybe then we have more of a chance. And that's kind of what we're working on. And then the security issues will take care of themselves. But without it, we keep building this risk of climate as a security risk.
Retired Navy Rear Admiral David Tidley is the founding director of the Center for Solutions to Weather and Climate Risk at Penn State. And here in our Closer Look studios, we have Professor Jared Hayes at the Sam Nunn School of International Affairs at Georgia Tech. Gentlemen, the debate, I'm sure, will continue. Thank you both for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.